He used to cover Sporting. He used to cover the Chiefs. Now he covers everything. Okay, we get it. He's the columnist for the Kansas City Star, Sam McDowell, only on the program.
Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Sir and Petro with you, as we are just having too much fun, right? Got to keep your head on a swivel for crying out loud. Curtis yelling at me, you're back. Sorry, Adam. My bad.
It's all good. It worked out. It couldn't have been better timing, to be honest with you.
Yeah. All right. Good. I didn't know Curtis was like, go. All right. We're at the CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am, presented by Bank Midwest. A great event out here at the beautiful Loch Lloyd Country Club. It benefits Alpha Point. You can see all the great services that Alpha Point provides at alphapoint.org. Visually impaired, blind, people who are recently blind, adults, children, all kinds of services. Go to alphapoint.org. We, of course, thank Charlie Cook for taking some time to talk to us. We were chatting here for a little bit afterwards. We now talk to Sam McDowell from the Kansas City Star. Sam is in D.C., so we did not have a chance because he is now at the White House as we speak. So a couple hours ago, we had a chance to talk to Sam. Of course, Sam brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. You know, you can be seen by the same experts that care for the Royals right now. Just go to 435 and all. No appointment necessary. That is where you can find them. That's right, 435 and all. 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 8 to 2 on Saturdays. For more information, just go to kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. Sam McDowell, we started out by finding out exactly how D.C. is treating him.
It's good. To be honest, I didn't know that today was the day at the golf course. I think I was on that trip last year. I got lucky, and that was also on a Monday. I'm kind of bummed to miss that because I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, that that included some kind of free beverage during the appearance last year.
It did. It did include a free beverage and free food if you wanted it. We've got it all. They do such a great job here at the tournament. Our friends at Jay Rieger. Are sponsoring a couple of the holes on the tournament. They've got the different treats. M. Shamas, is got food here. We're doing fine. We're good. We may not be rubbing elbows with the president of the United States, but I think we're eating and drinking better than you will. I mean, isn't the order of fare there at the isn't it Burger King? Is that what I recall?
Yeah, I think it was McDonald's, right?
I can't remember which it was.
And based on the setup of the clubhouse, we are also in the East Room.
Yes. So Biden there, Sam. What do you think about that?
I think you guys got one over on me, yeah.
Yeah. Did you go last time?
No, because remember last time was the COVID year. But if you're in the Royals time, though, right. No, I didn't go to the Royals time either, so... This is the first time the Chiefs have ever been. This tradition, I think, started in like around 80 or so. So it was after they won their first Super Bowl. And but President Nixon called Len Dawson after that one. So they did used to have that locker room phone call. But it's the first time that this organization has actually made this trip to the White House.
There has been no greater football fan in the White House than Richard Nixon. Yeah. He used to diagram plays to send over for George Allen when he was coach in Washington. He was a stone cold freak when it comes to football.
Yeah. So today will be history then with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm looking for Joe Biden to design something and just slip it to Andy Reid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be like not completely out of Andy Reid's arsenal to somehow turn something like that into something he runs, like just against the Raiders or something?
When they're up 30, you're saying that kind of thing?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Biden right. You know, I guess it'd probably be Biden left, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Biden left, yeah.
See what I did there? Huh? Political humor.
Every player on the left side of the left football. completely illegal formation, but.
we laugh.
First of all, this has to happen now because now when all the questions after a presser are just, hey, where did this play originate? Well, actually, I was listening to the radio. These guys came up with a name for it, and I thought, I've got to get a play from.
I look forward to it very much so. All right, so we got that great event. And, of course, do you suppose Joe Biden will question Dave Tobe about why he brings kickoffs out?
He wouldn't be the only one. But yeah,
would he say, I like your liberal approach to bringing the ball out of the end zone?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I don't know. I don't know what answer you would have for that. But other than, you know, how are we going to score a touchdown otherwise? But yeah.
Yeah. So let's get into that exchange. How did it feel? To be at the receiving end of Dave Tobe's wrath. How else are you going to score a touchdown? What you want to describe the thought process behind your asking him why he's aggressive and him being aggressive towards you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, last year these settings of Dave Tobe press conferences could get kind of contentious before they even started. I remember him walking into one of them last year and leaning back against the wall and going, oh, is this the firing squad? So I think he probably in a late May press conference, I was trying to do the math here to figure, I guess that could have been early June, was probably anticipating kind of a lighter day other than the fact that there had been this rule change. I know it was pretty evident he wanted to speak on the new kickoff rule that allows teams to take a touchback if they just fair catch it, because the Chiefs, on kickoffs, both ways, view them as strategic opportunities. And for the longest time, you know, Harrison Butker, you'll see him pop up some kicks short, and you'll see the Chiefs be pretty aggressive and compared to other teams. So I think that was the anticipated conversation, but he was so adamant, even during that explanation of the rule, that, you know, it's not, by the way, the fair catch, that's not something we're going to do. You guys know we're gonna still run it out. We're gonna be aggressive. And so yeah, I just wanted to get into, well, why? Because everything that you look at, everything that I look at, that is available to us, you know, media and fans and all that stuff, shows that it's not the right way to go. And look, I think it allowed him the opportunity to answer the question he wanted to answer. But I still don't think it was a great answer when he responds, well, how else are you going to score a touchdown if you don't return it?
Duh.
Because that's our point.
I thought it was interesting,
right?
When he added, duh.
Yeah, right.
You know, like,
that's our point though, right? Is when he says, how are you going to score a touchdown? And look, I mean, Dave Tobe is referring to a kickoff return. The implication there, what he wants to infer there, is how else are you going to score on a kickoff return? That's not what he said, but that's what he meant. But the phrase he actually said, how are you going to score a touchdown if you don't return? That's our point, is this team scores touchdowns when they don't return it. They're fine. Like, stop adding the variance to plays that don't involve this particular quarterback.
Well, Dave Tobe returning to his days as a copywriter for the Kansas Lottery and his infamous campaign, can't win if you don't play.
Yeah, right? How else are you going to win the $700 million jackpot if you got to play every drawing by multiple tickets every time? You got to do it. Yeah. But
it does feel like a lottery. If they get one, they got it. They got the Powerball.
Yeah, well, and
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was going to say, what Chris just said there is perfect, because if they get one, that's I think all the evidence here is anecdotal. It's not the long term stat based analysis that leads them to this type of decision. It's, you know, what a huge play it is if you get one. It's like, well, obviously you could have scored anyway. This team scores a lot. But, you know, this whole exercise prompted me to go back through and see how many times I guess I would start off with this, Ren. What kicks do you think are going to be the best sort of fair catch opportunities, the kickoffs that are going to be most affected by this new rule?
Well, the ones that, like, from the one to the five.
That's what I think, too. Because look, if you, the end zones are obviously unaffected by this new rule. You already could have knelt down for a touchback. If you get the kickoff to like the 10, you're probably not going to be fair catching it. You're probably going to say, I statistically should normally get this kick beyond the 25 yard line. So I went back and looked at all the kickoffs that the Chiefs returned from the 1 to the 5 yard line last year and even deeper. They returned 6 kickoffs from in the end zone. And there's a website, NFL Index, that grades every single play in the NFL by the expected points added, or, you know, that's the stat, but sometimes it's expected points subtracted. All 6 kickoffs that they returned last year from inside their own end zone were negative points added. So they subtracted their expected points. And a lot of them by a pretty significant margin, like a couple of them were almost 1 point. They had 19 others that were from the 1 to the 5 yard line. And of those, only 6 of those added expected points. And by a small margin, except for one kickoff that Isaiah Pacheco took back against San Francisco, added like half a point. And by the way, they got aided by the fact that there was a penalty, unsportsmanlike, a hit out of bounds at the end of that play. That play, when Dave Tobe says, how else are you going to score a touchdown? The Chiefs haven't scored a touchdown in kickoff since 2020.
53 games since they've
week played. 7.
Yeah.
Week 7 in Denver. And, you know, when you look at all of these plays from inside their own 5, 8 of them robbed them of at least 1/3 of an expected point. Only 2 of them added that margin. So it's all of these that it's not only does, you know, the way I phrased it in my column, not only does the pendulum swing more frequently towards a bust play, but also when it is a bust, it's usually more significantly a bust than as opposed to the boom play. So it's like all of this data is telling you, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Now the NFL is saying, we'll give you an out not to do this. We'll reward you for not doing this. And you still have Dave Tobe that says, I'm going to do it. I want to do it. We're going to be aggressive.
The last 2 seasons combined, the Chiefs have scored 976 points. That's second only to Dallas in those 2 seasons. Second overall in points scored without a kickoff return touchdown. The impact of the kickoff return on the Chiefs scoring has been minimal at best.
Totally agree. And that includes, Curtis, the part where the Chiefs kind of struggled more on the points total than they did on a yards total because of their turnover streak that they went through. So the Chiefs last year led the NFL in yards per drive. They averaged 40 yards per drive. They led it in points per drive, 2.76. They also led the NFL in series success rate, which just means however many times you get a 1st and 10, how often do you convert that to either a new set of downs or a touchdown? 78% of the time, they convert a 1st and 10 into a new set of downs or a touchdown. So all the data also says you have the best offense in the NFL. Just don't screw it up everywhere else in the game. Like that is the job of a kick returner. Don't screw it up because you've got a good thing going over here. If your sole goal on this play, hand the ball to Patrick Mahomes. The NFL is now saying all you have to do to hand the ball to Patrick Mahomes is fair catch the kickoff.
It is amazing. And when he says, like, you know us, we're going to be aggressive. That's what we do. When your reason for doing something is that because that's what we've always done, like right there, I don't want to say intelligent people, right? Like, because it's being inferred that I'm saying Dave Tobe's not intelligent. And that's not what I'm saying. He's stubborn. Right. But when you have to catch yourself, I don't care who you are or what you do. If you go, well, we're doing this because we've always done it. That should immediately send off an alarm in your head. Wait a minute. Why am I saying this? That's just a saying. There's no logic or reason behind that being a tangible reason for anything. Like everything should be examined. Right. And as to, is this the right way to do it? I mean, I'm sure there was a guy who's like, you know, a combustion engine. No, thanks. Bessie's always got me where I need to go and cracked the whip on the mule. And like that dumbass went out of business and died penniless and broke and starving to death. Right. Like if you don't adapt with the times, you get left behind. And I'll be honest with you. The reason I think this is kind of note is, Andy Reid could hear that and be like, would you shut up? Would you stop with that nonsense? And he's not. That's the scarier thing, right? Like, this is obviously where the league is going, Sam, is people have real analytics and they look at it and they employ it and it works. And when I've always said, like Bill Belichick, I think has become Scott Pioli, like where I, his first days in the office, and he was talking about the you know, his system, not the system. What did he always call it? The process.
Process.
You know, I'm like, yeah, the process is great. But like when you walk down the hall, there ain't no Bill Belichick and there sure as hell ain't no Tom Brady out there. Right. And he was like, oh, no, there's so much more to it. No, there really isn't. Right. Not at that level. That's where it starts. OK, but that's the GM level. Right. Like he just couldn't understand. No, no, this is how we do it. It's a process. Well, that's what you do when you already have those pieces in place. Right. Well, now this is my point with this, with Andy Reid, is if Andy Reid is letting Dave Tobe continue to do these things, is Andy Reid slipping? Is this the beginning of Andy Reid starting to get passed by the fact that he won't rein in his offensive coordinator? Or, I'm sorry, special teams coordinator.
Special teams coordinator. Well, I actually think that, you know, this has always been part of the resume of Andy Reid. I think he has this philosophy of entrusting his coaches. You know, I don't think he gets too involved in what Steve Spagnuolo does. And obviously there's been times where that defense has struggled during his tenure. I do think, to your point, Seren, about you're not calling Dave Tobe dumb. Like this, to me, this is I think you could take it as an indictment of the entire special teams operation. I think it's an indictment of the decision making within it. I still think that Dave Tobe's a good coach. I do think that players grow under him. And that was actually the answer that I had expected when I asked the last question about why are you continuing to be aggressive? I thought that the answer was going to be something that was going to be more immeasurable, that was going to be harder maybe to distinguish against as far as with stats, because I thought he could have said something along the lines of, you know, if you look at us over the years, a lot of guys that make impact for us at wide receiver, at running back, offensive line, the defensive backfield, linebacker. We started them off on special teams, and we really believe they've grown as football players by getting those snaps, and we don't want to rob them of that experience because that eventually helps us down the road. I thought that could have been the most appropriate answer. I still wouldn't have liked that answer, but I would have argued less with it. The fact that it was just instead pointing to, well, you could score a touchdown on it. It's like, okay, well, now that brings the stats not just into the conversation, but it's the entire conversation. And I agree with you that reasoning is alarming because it's completely ignores what's sitting right in front of you.
Well, and it's alarming. And again, I do think it's alarming. It's like the first alarm bell that you go like, all right, where do we, let's keep an eye on this and see where we go elsewhere. Like Patrick Mahomes is good enough to overcome things, but how good is he if he doesn't have to overcome things, right? It's been my whole point
exactly.
About
why make him.
Yeah, exactly. It's been my whole point about like, well, Patrick Mahomes is the best at negating the rush. Well, he's also the best from a clean pocket. So let's not have him negate the rush. Also, like he avoided the sack when he almost broke his leg, but he limped, hobbled through three playoff games because of it. How about get the fat ass off a left tackle and let's actually protect the guy? And so we don't have to worry about that kind of thing. Like I never like the results of like, oh, well, Pat did it all. So let's put some more on his back. You know, eventually there is the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I don't want to see the camel broken. Okay, I want to see it healthy and
it's an important camel.
Yes, and thriving out there on the field, and that's where this is like, okay, tackled at the 17, or guess what, Pat, you're not going to get a shot because we fumbled it, right? Like that your whole point about him coming out of like, okay, how's he going to say this? I was like, he had, what do we say, 9 days, 10 days between when he went to the podium and when the rule came. I'm like, that's a lot of time to put together some analytics. Right. To put together some numbers that says like, OK, yeah, we haven't done it in a while. And even think through, well, what's the obvious retort? Well, these guys are smart enough to at least go look up when our last kick return was. Maybe I better do that. When did we do it? And I thought for sure with that question, we were going to get a little bit of Dick Vermeil. Well, when you get a return touchdown in the NFL, you win 70% of the time. You know, or yes, we have a quarterback and an offense that is so good. That's why we can go for it and be aggressive because we know that they can pick us up and somehow try to prove, like, you know, Patrick Mahomes starting, you know, is we're, you know, 64% likely to score a touchdown when we start from the 25, and we're 63.6% when we start from the 21. You know, some like, you've got a whole staff there that could have just, and you could have told them, I only want numbers that support my cause, right? Like, you don't even have to do a real scientific study. You can put the analytics department on, just come up with what makes this look good. Okay. Oh, nope, that didn't work. Oh, nope, that you could find something. And he had nothing. He had not, that's where I know it's just pure stubbornness.
Yeah, because I think, to your point about the, you know, the long time to prepare for this, I think he was. I mean, he came out firing as far as, like, he volunteered first that he was going to be aggressive before he was asked about it. And, you know, I mean, you make the point about turnovers. First of all, the Chiefs did turn it over on a kickoff last year. I think a lot of people would say, no, they turned it over a lot. A lot of those were punt returns. Jody Fortson fumbled a kickoff return last year at the end of the half against the Jaguars. Jaguars got a free field goal out of it. They missed it. But the sort of the best case scenarios for the Chiefs, I mean, idealistically, yes, it's a touchdown. We mentioned how long it's been since they scored a touchdown. And by the way, the Chiefs aren't unique there. There's only 6 kickoff returns on the touchdown in the entire league last year. I think one team returned one twice. I think he had 5 of the 32 teams that could say we had a kickoff return for a touchdown last year. So those are like the best case scenarios, but they don't really happen. The best case scenario that did happen is what I mentioned. The Chiefs had one kickoff return past midfield. You look at the inverse of it. For the worst case scenario, it's not just the turnovers. You can have holding penalties. 3 times last year, the Chiefs started inside their own 10-yard line because they got a holding penalty on the kickoff return. That's an extremely small sample size, but I will point out the Chiefs did have to punt on 2 of those 3 drives. And so therefore, now you've got those 4 drives. I mentioned earlier the Chiefs scored 2.76 points per drive. On those 4, they get 1.76. You know, that's the equivalent of like what the Pittsburgh Steelers put up last year.
Yeah, and not to mention, and the obvious reason why it goes that way is because when you get a holding penalty and you start from your 11, the whole playbook's not open to you. And maybe exactly. It's not, maybe the whole thing's not open at the 25 either, but it's definitely less of it that's open when you're coming out. And plus there's just the human element of maybe it shouldn't be that way. But you know you're going to be more conservative when you're like, oh, if we screw it up, this is points immediately the other way. So you're going to tend to be more conservative in what you do in that situation. And so, the whole mindset, it just is, it's scary. I mean, I'll be honest with you, it's scary. All right, let's take a break. We're talking to Sam McDowell. He's in D.C., where he'll be at the White House here in a little bit, where the Kansas City Chiefs will meet with the president to celebrate their championship last year. Sam McDowell is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care right there, 435 and all in Overland Park. Weekdays are open 8 to 7. Saturdays it's 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. We're broadcasting live here at the CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am presented by Bank Midwest. Great tournament benefiting those. Great company, great organization, Alpha Point, benefiting those that are blind and visually impaired in many, many different ways. We will take a break. More with Sam McDowell next here in the program.
All right, the Good Sense end of the hour answer. How many players have scored 40 points and lost 3 times in one postseason?
Wow, at least one. One would be the Joker for sure. I'm going to say he's it. That's the kind of thing you like to do.
Actually, 5.
Oh, okay.
Luka Doncic did it last year. LeBron James in 2009. Kareem in 1977. And the king of scoring 40 points and losing, Jerry West, 1965.
Wow, not bad. Playing for a little Good Sense, goodsensesubs.com. Get it right now. Get it on your way home. You can order it ASAP. That I'll have it ready in about 20 minutes. Or pick what time you want to pick it up on your way home for some dinner tonight. The meats, cheeses, that's sliced fresh right in front of the bread. Baked fresh twice each day. Pillowy soft, wonderful bread. The best sandwich in town's at Good Sense. Go to goodsensesubs.com to put your order in. Sam McDowell's with us. Brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. system, as he is in D.C., where the president will meet with the Kansas City Chiefs, and Sam will be there rubbing elbows, schmoozing with the power brokers of America and really the world. It's where Sam feels most comfortable. Is that right?
Yeah. It actually is a little bit of an odd setting, Soren. I you know, we're going to see guys who are used to having like fans gushing over their presence, I think feel the inverse effect of that. I think they're going to be the ones that are sort of caught up in the moment, and it's probably going to be a little bit of a surreal feeling for them who they're surrounded by today.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think so. I would think it would be a little bit awe-inspiring, you know, being at the White House, seeing something that you see on TV all the time and see with very serious events and everything. And then there you are in the middle of it. You know, it's, I don't know, maybe it'll go the other way. Maybe it'll blow up their head. Yeah, I'm so important. I'm at the White House. You know, look at me. But I think for most people, it would be a little bit awe-inspiring and be like, wow, kind of just recognize the moment that you're getting to enjoy there for sure. Look forward to hearing and reading what Sam will write in the Kansas City Star about it. Sam, let's talk a little bit about your Kansas City Royals. Another frustrating series against a team that's not that good, although Colorado have been playing better baseball of late, but Chris Bryant was hurt. And again, they're not a great team. You know, Randy and I on our Kauffman Corner podcast decided we would focus on previewing the draft. And it was noted in the chat room, it's June 4th and we're talking draft already. Ah, the joy of being a Royals fan. Where do you sit on where this ball club is? It's at least we're seeing a lot of young players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like I've mentioned. I mean, that's what we should have been doing, you know, the past couple of years, was seeing some of these guys. I think what is a little alarming about the progress of the season, and I know I've used that a word a couple times here already, but we haven't seen great growth from some of the guys that they are evaluating. You know, I mean, I think if you look at, you know, Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez, I think you'd argue more that they've taken a step back as opposed to taking a step forward. And it's the key areas, especially for Bobby Witt, that, you know, I continue to look at his numbers like almost on a daily basis just to see what kind of pitches he's swinging at. And we're still in the 37% range on swinging on chase. And, you know, I'm interested to see Drew Waters. He was a guy, I think, what probably top five of on the list of guys I was interested in seeing this season. Now that he's up, I'm curious to see how he finishes out the year, but I thought that playing a lot of young guys, we'd be pointing to more early, even if it's only 2 months of the season, we'd be pointing toward more early season success stories than just, you know, Nick Prado's had a good 6 weeks overall. Michael Massey had a good stretch after a really, really bad stretch. But I just thought that we'd have more to point to than just these couple of guys.
We haven't had a chance to talk to you since you wrote about the release of Hunter Dozier. But what should be the takeaway from that? Is that a sign that things are being done differently with Dayton Moore? Is it with Dayton Moore out and JJ Piccolo in? Is it just, you know, is should it be a cautionary tale to people that, listen, I don't care how the Royals sold it, they're a long way away and they know it. What's the takeaway from that if you're a Royals fan?
Yeah, I think it's just, I mean, to be honest, I just think it's cutting bait with a guy who's not performing well. And I did ask about, you know, is this an indication that maybe this ownership is more willing to shed salary than past ownership? Now, obviously, you've got people involved that are having those conversations with ownership that probably weren't that involved with previous ownership. But I think you potentially could read into it as that. But to me, I was curious as far as, you know, Hunter Dozier was obviously, we talk a lot, Soren, about whether or not the Royals should be locking up some of their young players. They did that with Hunter Dozier. It obviously did not work out. It's not like you wouldn't hope that having one failure of that, you know, on your books for next year is just going to be catastrophic to a payroll, although we are talking about a team that doesn't like to spend a lot of money on their payroll. But, you know, I think that it prompted me to think about, would the Royals do this in the future with some of their younger players? Do they view this as a cautionary tale with, hey, this is what happens when you sign a young guy? And I think the answer to that is no, they don't. They think that's more of a one-off. But when we have had that conversation frequently about, you know, should, you know, what kind of extension, what would an extension look like for Bobby Witt Jr.? Last year, we're talking about Brady Singer or, you know, MJ Melendez. I think what's concerning is there's not a lot of those guys that make sense for the Royals to sign on to long-term right now. I think Vinny Pasquantino was one. Now he's played, we're getting up on his 1 year anniversary date in the major league. But other than that, I don't go down the list and say, man, you better get this guy before he gets pricey.
Yeah, no. And that's, and well, and I think so many of them, you know, the frustrating part about this year, you know, I don't think now if the players were showing signs of turning the corner, the record wouldn't be as bad. So they are linked. You know, I was going to say that you don't really worry about the record. It's that the players aren't getting better. But if the players are getting better, then the record would be better. But that's the concerning part right here, right? Is that we're not seeing, you know, Randy and I talked about this as well last night. Who has gotten better this year? Right. And we went all the way down into the minor leagues. Randy went through like the top 13 prospects, according to Baseball America. And our at the end of the process, we came to the conclusion, guys that have absolutely gotten better. We settled on Michael Garcia. Just even though the statistics are not better than what he put up last year, he is showing that he can hang in the big leagues. Right. Which is a step, which is, I think you can look at Michael Garcia and feel like we've got at least a utility player there. Right. He's going to have big league at bats. And so that is progress. We pointed to Frank Mazzucato. And I think there was one other. Who am I forgetting?
Prado, maybe?
Prado showing an ability to get on base at the big league level, looking better in left field. And that was it. Like, even Vinny Pasquantino. I mean, you know, he's not better this year than last year. You know, his on base has gone from 383 to 335. Last year he did that in 300 plate appearances. This year he's got 250, right? So his OPS 832 to 785. I still think he's going to be a fine hitter. I think he's, you know, sampling him right now as you're catching him at a down spot where he's been in a slump. And I think he will come out of it and hit better. And those numbers will get back up there. But, you know, like you can't even go sign somebody if you wanted to right now, right? Because who would you feel comfortable giving a long-term contract that you're not going to end up cutting him like your Hunter Dozier? Who would you sell to John Sherman? We should invest this kind of money in a guy, you know, after you just cut Hunter Dozier. Pasquantino's probably the only guy, right?
I think Pasquantino's the only guy on that list. So I do agree that Pasquantino maybe statistically hasn't taken a step forward. I do think if you, like, rephrase that question and said, who do you feel more confident about today than you did a year ago? I think Pasquantino would be on that list, because I still think seeing him do what he's done for an extra, whatever it's been, 250 plate appearances or how many ever he's had, I still think there's value in that. Like, I'm more confident that Vinny Pasquantino is going to be a consistent major league hitter at this time now than I was at the onset of last year. So I still think he's the only guy on that list, though. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. has all the talent in the world. Like I mentioned at the top of this, he still hasn't been able to lay off pitches. And, you know, MJ Melendez certainly is not on the list that you said you and Rainey came up with last night. I think he's been one of the guys that most evidently not taken a step forward. He's playing a different position. He's not hitting as well, which, look, I mean, if MJ Melendez was going to hit 35 homers, he's fine out in right field. If he's going to have an 850 OPS, he's fine outright. But that's not where his numbers are. Now all of a sudden you're wondering, well, gosh, how valuable is he as a corner outfield? You know, the numbers he's putting up are valuable for what a catcher might hit.
They actually are not even that. His numbers right now, 671 OPS. I mean, that's not 214, 304, 367. That's backup catcher numbers. I mean, you're putting him in a premium defensive position. So, listen. And again, I still give him the opportunity to get back more towards what he did last year. But we're talking about a guy who's now, last year, 217, 313, 393. This year, 214, 304, 367. At some point, you are what the back of your baseball card says you are. And
Yeah, I mean, I still think we're probably not quite there yet with a lot of these guys. And I mean, I think that's going to be some of the frustration is, Stern, we've, you know, I mean, John Sherman said it to me, it's an evaluation year. And I think if you're a Royals fan, you should be concerned, does that become evaluation years? And if so, how many? I mean, because if you're evaluating this year, the evaluation is telling you that these guys are not major league stars. These guys right now are not part of a core of the next playoff team. They still could be. And that's why I said, I think the concern should be, does it become evaluation years? Yeah. Are you saying I need to learn more about these guys?
And I think the answer could be yes, but with basically 2/3 of a season still to go, very quickly, you go from the 1/3 to the halfway mark real quick. By the way, 54-81 pops up pretty quick. So, you know, very soon we'll be halfway through. We'll be coming up on the trade deadline. But there's still a lot of time and a lot of baseball to be played for these guys to start showing progress and to turn the corner. And I think the other thing that needs to be pointed out is, like, Dayton Moore, everyone, no one liked that 1,500 at-bat line that he had. But it proved very prophetic with Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer. That really was the time that they started to turn the corner. And I think we can add to that, like, you never really know what a player is until you get about 1,500 at-bats in him, unless they're a true superstar. Like superstars or at least stars, maybe I don't want to get bogged down in the vernacular here, but stars come up and can play at a high level right away. And, you know, but there's truth in that 1,500 at-bats. And if you had a star, you know, if Ken Griffey were roaming around center field amongst these other players, you'd feel a lot better. Reality is they don't have a star, but they didn't have a star when they won a World Series. And I think it's harder to win that way. But, you know, I think that is one thing that at least you know where you are now, right? Like, none of these guys are stars. Can we agree with that? Do you think any one of these players that we're talking about has got a shot to go to Cooperstown?
Well, I mean, a shot, if like a really small shot, I mean, I guess a shot, I wouldn't say that Bobby Witt Jr. has no shot. But yeah, I think all of them are certainly not on that kind of trajectory. I don't think any of them are on the sort of trajectory right now. Again, maybe Vinny, where you say that guy's going to be an all-star in 2 years.
Yeah, so to me, you at least start to know, okay, we don't have any stars here. And what my hope is that they're going to be like, look, they've got guys down in A-ball that are having like the 14, 15 strikeouts per nine. That means they're ready to make a move up, and they're not moving them. Despite Frank Mazzucato's what a collision with a teammate, which yeah. I am
on a month
screams to me like what collided his fist with a guy's face, you know, like the vagueness of what they're doing screams that there was some kind of altercation that was there. Like when else do you not get a breakdown on what the injury is in baseball and especially with this club? Can you tell me, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, you're putting that thought in my mind for the first time. So,
was the first thing I thought when I read it on what Saturday was that when that stuff came out to Friday or Saturday?
Saturday, yeah. I think.
It came out, and I'm like, what is this? Like, remember Chris Bubich had a strain of the blah 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 ulnar mm-hmm. tech. You know, they go into all this detail. No, we get nothing on this. So I don't know. I don't have any inside information as to what it is, but it screams of it. I just hope that the kid is not hurt. We talked about Brian Taylor, the Yankees 1-1 from years ago, who got into a fight and ended up tearing up his shoulder and never made it to the big leagues, and he was going to be a star. So I hope nothing is as serious on this.
He's got this whole crazy thing. That's what Mazzucato has.
Yeah, it's but, you know, he and others down there are all looking like they're ready for a promotion. And I look at it and say, well, his walks are still a little too high. So either the Royals weren't promoting him because they're saying you can't get out of your level until you get your walks down, which I'm fine with, or they're polishing up some guys and letting them build up some numbers because they're actually going to go into a trade deadline and they might move more than just let's take whatever we can get for whatever, you know, reliever we can trade. That maybe they're saying, okay, we'll move two relievers and a prospect to go get this number one stud prospect. That's my hope. That's what I'd like to see at the trade deadline.
Well, I was actually considering the trade deadline earlier, like a week or so ago, Strand, and I don't know how great their trade candidates are. I think it would take something like that to where you've got to package more of what a team wants for the future in order to get the guy you want. Because, I mean, yeah, we look at the back end of their bullpen and say those are guys they're willing to trade. But, I mean, it's not like they said Scott Barlow was off limits last year and he had an extra year under control. And his numbers were better a year ago than they were now, than they are now. And so I don't know what the quality of offers you're going to get for some of the guys that the Royals would quote unquote put on the trade block, in which case you're right. You probably are going to have to throw in some extra if you really, really want a guy that you think could be part of your core moving forward.
Let's take a break. We're here at the wonderful Alpha Point Golf Tournament, the CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am, presented by Bank Midwest. We're talking to Sam McDowell. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. We talk sporting Kansas City next here in the program. Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we broadcast a beautiful Loch Lloyd Country Club. The CNC Group Alpha Point Pro-Am presented by Bank Midwest is where we are at, benefiting Alpha Point, a wonderful organization helping visually impaired youngsters, adults with employment, all kinds of different services. You can find out more by going to alphapoint.org. We're talking to Sam McDowell, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. You can walk right in, get seen by the same experts that care for the Royals. They got their walk-in clinic for orthopedic care. It's open weekdays 8 to 7, Saturdays 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. Sam, sporting looked like for more than an hour they were going to get 3 points on the road in Vancouver. Ends up just being 1 point because of a foolish penalty, which has been kind of a theme. They'd gotten away from it early, but they were also, you know, they've had some adversity there in the back line with some injuries here of late. But do you feel like the ship is now righted with where they're at, just 2 points out of a playoff spot as we speak right now?
Yeah, I mean, and I also think that the opportunity is there for more, because you look at the stretch they're coming up on. I think they still play like 4 of their next 5 or something. They're in a stretch of 6 of 8 home matches. And when you look at the standings of where these teams are, like they're not, they do play LAFC. But other than that, they're not like top tier teams. I mean, they're all very winnable games for Sporting. So I think by the end of the stretch, you know, obviously they have this huge break. I think it's the end of July, early August. It's like a six week break for this League's Cup that MLS is doing. I think by the end of that break, I actually do think they'll be above the playoff line. I think they're playing well enough in the West. It's not like, you know, there's not a lot of teams in that 7, 8, 9 range that you say, yeah, but this team's also struggling. I think they're going to take off as well. I think more of those teams are who they are, as opposed to Sporting that just now has some guys back, and they're certainly playing a lot better. I still don't think that it's this, you know, Peter Vermes has said, I think once we get everybody back, we're not just a good team, we're a great team. I don't know that I'm convinced they're that yet. I still think, you know, once they've got everybody back, let's say the season started today and you play it out, I think they're still more along that 3 to 4 range in the West.
Is Peter Vermes again learning the lesson? Is it a lesson he needs to learn that old guys get hurt? Johnny Russell's hurt. Graham Zusi's hurt. You know, like, is he not serving the youth enough? Is that the last hurdle for him to get over as a manager, that maybe he's still relying too much on veteran guys?
Yeah, so don't disagree with that, but I think it's problematic for the reasons why they have to rely on veteran guys. You know, Sporting's Academy, because of the territory they draw from, and just to be blunt about it, they don't have the talent that a lot of these other teams do in their academy. And so therefore you're not seeing, you know, they play FC Dallas the other night. Their lineups and their rosters are always littered with Academy kids, or they're selling Academy kids for significant fees to bring in other talent. Sporting, I mean, Gianluca Buzio is the exception, not the rule for them. And so I think it's the reason why they've had to rely on veteran talent. You know, obviously MLS has this initiative about acquiring players under 22. Sporting hasn't had a great success or hit rate on those guys either. So, yeah, I think they'd like to play with a younger roster, but they haven't been able to acquire or develop the right kind of talent to do that.
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that they're 4-2-1 since Jake Davis, and 2 being the draws. That's the new way of putting it in MLS. 4 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss since Jake Davis entered the lineup, and they got younger there and got more athletic there. I do think it's a key part of the equation. Sam, go enjoy the White House. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Who hit the most career home runs at Old Busch Stadium? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.